Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Welcome to Yoga, Birth, Babies, a podcast produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. We will be diving into everything prenatal yoga, birth, and baby-related, hoping to inspire, educate, and empower you through your journey into motherhood. Thank you for listening. Hi, everyone. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. I'm your host for Yoga Birth Babies. And you may have noticed recently, maybe the last month or so, we've had a fair amount of podcasts about postpartum health, preparing for postpartum. So we're going to continue on that trajectory. And we have Evelyn Gamma here. She's a licensed mental health therapist. And we're going to talk about planning for mental health check-in postpartum. But before we get to that, I just wanted to give a little shout out to the listeners of the podcast, because it makes me feel so amazing that you guys are getting something from this. So I recently checked our reviews and ratings on iTunes. So again, little hint, if you haven't done this, please run over and leave a rating and review. So as I was checking, one just came in a few days ago and it just thrilled me. So I want to share this. This is from Tarn84. So thank you. I'm just going to read a piece of this. The end goal of this podcast, it seems to me, is really how can we give moms as much knowledge as possible to make them feel empowered, as well as bring more compassion into the space of pregnancy, motherhood, and yoga. As a mom and yoga teacher, I am thankful, and I wish I could come up with a bigger word than that for this podcast. It's information and the love I feel for mothers when listening to it through my iPhone speakers. Thank you, Tarn, because you're absolutely right. What this whole podcast is about is giving back to the community, that people have the information, they can make their own choices, and hopefully this creates a smoother path through pregnancy and motherhood. And when there are bumps, hopefully we're giving them that information to get past the bumps and to find resources and help. So reading that just really resonated with me, because that is exactly the whole purpose of this. So thank you, thank you, thank you. Also, just a quick reminder that we do have a donation button on the Prenatal Yoga Center website, just to help keep this running. It's a passion project of mine, but it does take time and energy and money to help my whole team keep this going. So anyway, we're going to move forward. Oh, one last thing I forgot to mention. So besides the podcast, besides the teacher trainings, besides the yoga studio, I am launching an online course. I know, just another hat to put on my head of things to do. And on the 25th of October, I'll be leading a free webinar called The Three Big Mistakes Yoga Teachers Make with Pregnant Students and How to Avoid Them with Grace and Confidence. You can check that out, find that on my website, and then to sign up. And then I'm also, that's leading into a bigger online course. It's a 5-week course called Who's Afraid of the Pregnant Yogi? And the purpose of that is those that are teachers who are not specialized in prenatal, but then often have pregnant students in class, that you have the tools to help the pregnant students so that you don't ignore her and you don't hurt her. So check that out. You can sign up on the Prenatal Yoga Center website. You can also find us at www.whoisafraidofthepregnantyogi. All right, now let's jump into our podcast. Thanks so much. Hi, Evelyn. I'm so glad you're here. Thank you so much for taking your time to speak with me.
Sure. I'm so glad to speak with you. I've been a part of the PYC community for two babies, so it's really my pleasure.
And I love when I can dip into the pool of talent from our community, because you guys really understand what we stand for and our message, and you're part of it. So that's really exciting. So I think today's topic is extremely important. And I've been kind of on this motherhood mental health kick for my podcast recently. So when you and I connected, mm-hmm. I was like, okay, this is where we're going. All right. So before we jump into planning for mental health check-in for postpartum, just tell me a little bit about yourself and how you came to this work.
Sure. So I began my career working with young children, and I still love to do that. I do play therapy with children and parents, but I quickly realized that I also wanted to have an impact on the broader family system. So I spent a good amount of time doing family systems work in Manhattan and the Bronx, and when I began even just thinking about becoming a mother, I realized that was a new area in which I could support families. So I completed specialized training in perinatal mental health, and I began integrating that focus into my private practice. So now the bulk of my practice is fertility, pregnancy, and postpartum. And I think that's because there's such a need for it for individuals mm-hmm. and for families. So I see people individually. I see couples, I see the dyad of mom and baby or mom and child, and I'm just so happy to be able to serve the whole family. But I think that maternal mental health especially is kind of a passion because I have two children of my own, and I was lucky to have a lot of support with both kids. But it's life changing. It's transforming. So that's what brought me to this work. And now I have a private practice here in the city, and I facilitate a special needs support group and support special needs parents individually as well. One of my children has special needs. And then my newest project is a birth processing group, which has been really wonderful and rich in what the women are sharing with each other. So
that's wonderful. Yeah. So it's just an opportunity for them to talk about their birth and process what happened.
Exactly. I think, and we just get the message in society that we need to kind of move forward, right? The at least you have a healthy baby message, or, oh, well, all's well that ends well kind of thing. But there's a lot deeper. I mean, birth is one of the biggest events of many people's lives. And so having the space to just process it and process those feelings is really important. For women.
Oh, so, I love that. Because we have the new mom support group at our studio, mm-hmm. and that touches
which
into
that. Which is wonderful.
That. Oh, yeah, because you've done that.
Yes.
suggests our facilitator kind of dips into that, but I love that you're doing a whole mm-hmm. group because you're right. How many times have I heard students kind of sheepishly be like, well, the baby's fine. I'm like, but there's more to your history.
I
could go on such a tangent, but birth so deeply impacts the fabric of who you are, and then you pass that down to your children unknowingly. Like if someone had really traumatic birth, their child may hear it in certain likely will hear about it in certain ways. That's going to impact and color how they see it, and it just keeps trickling down. So what
exactly.
an amazing service
and
that is.
We add layers of meaning onto our births as well, right, based on our own narratives about ourselves or about experiences in our life. So I do think that it can contribute to postpartum mental health as well. So, which is, I know, our topic today. So.
Oh, yes, yes. Okay. All right. So maybe I might kind of dig into this a little deeper because
sure.
it fascinates me. So when we're talking about kind of the mental health in the postpartum, so I'm going to totally take a turn from where I thought I'd go. If somebody already has had a traumatic birth, or maybe... I mean, I guess traumatic would be more, if they had a really joyful birth, it wouldn't be as scary the second time. But if someone had a really traumatic birth and they didn't process it, mm-hmm. how would they prepare? Because I would think that'd be part of the mental check-in and preparation. Because I know my first birth was long and in hindsight really scared me to go through it again. And so I had mm-hmm. to really put some time into getting over that hump. So is that something that you would put in kind of the mental health check-in, and what would they do about that?
Definitely. I mean, I think sometimes when we don't process it, it's still going to be present, right? And so trauma can either live in our body or just come out in unwanted ways. So I think it's important to be really intentional about processing your birth and what the experience is like for you, no matter what the outcome might have been, even if the outcome was all fine. I think that's an important part of checking in if you're going to have another baby. So dealing with any anxiety and fear you might feel around that, or, I was just speaking about the narrative we add on top of our experiences. So if your narrative was, I failed in my last birth, which believe it or not, I do hear people say that, they didn't do enough to prevent this or that from happening or to have it go the way that they had wanted, so if that's the narrative you've added, that really has to be kind of dealt with and processed, or there's going to be so much pressure on the next birth, right, to be this corrective instead of maybe looking back on your previous birth and having a more compassionate voice about your birth and about, the things that were out of your control. And I think that can bring a little more peace and just acceptance and again compassion for yourself for your next birth.
Absolutely, and I think I think it can really prevent someone's birth from unfolding if they're still holding onto fear and maybe even self hatred of like, oh, I should have done that, and blame. So yeah, this is all part of like digging in, and I call it getting the skeletons out of the closet. And I tell my first time, I mean, I have these weird sayings. Like, I mean, I have some weird things, but you know, and I've seen this as a doula. I saw this very early in my doula career of fear that hadn't been acknowledged. Now we may not be able to totally get rid of it, but if it's not acknowledged, it can come up and really disrupt the whole birth. So I guess I'm going to throw my own in, and we're going to do a health check-in for fears before
yes.
birth.
Yeah, definitely. I think doulas, you know, are great, you know, can do that very well with women because they have been in so many births and just can be reassuring. But, you know, part of our birth processing group is we talk about that compassionate voice, and we call it sometimes the best friend voice. Because it can be hard to locate in yourself your own compassionate voice. But when you think about what a best friend would have said about your birth, it can kind of help you tap into that. So that's
That.
Just a little tool a doula can use to...
I do love that. And I think listeners, remember that. How would your best friend talk to you, or how would you talk to your best friend about your birth? Because probably kinder than you would say to yourself.
Mm-hmm.
All right, I'm going to pull this a little bit back to the mental health check-in.
Okay.
Sorry, when you talked about that, like my little ears perked up. I'm like, oh, we got to dive. All right. So why do you recommend someone prepare a postpartum health plan?
So we know new parenthood is such a wonderful but overwhelming time. We know that as many as 1 in 7, or even by some estimates as 1 in 5 women do encounter some form of pregnancy or postpartum mood disorder. So, and partners also sometimes suffer from postpartum mood disorders and changes and just the transition. And when you're in it, it's really difficult to have the energy or the self-awareness to seek help. So partners might see signs of postpartum mood disorders, but not know how to help the birthing parent.
Mm-hmm.
They can be afraid to bring it up. I know many partners have said they feel like they're walking on eggshells around the mom or the birthing parent anyway in those early days, because they're not totally sure what to do. So if she's having difficulty, you know, they may not engage. And the same goes for other family members. So I think it's just much easier for someone to reach out and get help quickly if they have a plan and they've talked about it beforehand. The good news about perinatal mood disorders is that they are very responsive to treatment. It's not overnight, but there's no reason to suffer or feel alone longer than you have to. So when you have a postpartum mental health plan, you can feel a bit more in control.
So what would be involved in planning for postpartum health?
So it really depends on the person and their history. But I think the bare minimum would be to just have to talk with your partner about, you know, having a check-in once a week or every couple of days. If, you know, how are you doing emotionally? So this could be your partner. If he or she is not the person that you would usually do that with, it could be another family member or a close friend. But just someone who's going to kind of check in with you on those, because unfortunately, there's so much focus on baby, sometimes mom gets lost. I mean, we might ask, how are you sleeping, or how are you doing, mom? But there's just not a lot of room to really dive in with someone safe who you feel like can hold it all. You know, so that would be kind of the bare minimum.
What kind of questions are they, besides like, how are you sleeping, how are you doing? What would that conversation look like?
It could be, you know, how are you feeling emotionally? You know, it could be something that the partner has noticed, you know, like, I noticed that towards the end of the day, you seem, you know, that can get tricky, right? Because if someone says, I noticed you seem really, really frazzled or irritated, you're like, what do you mean I'm irritated? but, you know, kind of saying like, is there something we could do? You know, are you feeling like yourself, or is there something we could do to help you with that? Or if the partner notices that, you know, the mom is crying more often than usual, or just postpartum mood disorders can look very different. The partner might notice hypervigilance, right? So always checking on the baby. So just being able to have open conversation about what the person is feeling, and B, maybe what the partner is noticing. And so when you talk about it before postpartum, you can kind of say like, what could I say that will feel okay to you?
Mm.
You know, so that's the part we sometimes skip is preparing to have those conversations. And then when we do have them, they kind of go south because it was asked in a certain way that pushed our buttons. But if we've talked about it beforehand, we know the intention, right? We know that they're not saying like, geez, you've been so angry lately. We know that they're saying like, hey, this is our check-in. Like, remember we said we were going to do this, you know?
I think that's great, having the questions ahead of time. You're right. Because if someone's like, wow, you're seeming really irritable, of course, and you'd be like, or like, you look really tired. You're like, yeah, I am. I'm a new parent. So I think that's great. Because again, it's coming from a place of caring, not picking on. Because I can imagine a new parent almost feeling picked on by the partner if they're faulting, if the new birthing parent feels judged or faulted by the person asking. So I think that's really smart, having that conversation ahead of time.
And I think the question should go both ways, right? Because the partner also is struggling sometimes, right? And it might not be on the same level, but still just being aware, like, this is hard for him or her too. Or this is, you know, this particular part has been difficult. Then, you know, it's just, it creates a more open environment for continuing to talk about these things. And it feels more supportive, right? It feels like you're on the same team.
How do you know when you've gone beyond that norm? Because you've been a new parent. I've been a new parent. There is, you know, a sense of being overwhelmed by the responsibility and fatigue, mental and physical. So are there any signs of like you've passed what we could call the norm or the common experience and when we've head into a place to call for help?
Yes, I think so. I mean, it is different for each person, but I think, you know, if you, I would describe it as feeling like you can't escape the feelings for some women. Not for all, but you know, baby blues are more kind of come and go. Like you have them in the first couple of weeks, and then you know you might also continue to have. We've all been there. You have hard days where you cry. You know, this is a more persistent feeling of either sadness or numbness, not feeling like yourself, not feeling like you can engage. That can be one symptom. You know, for anxiety, it might be hypervigilance, not being able to sleep when the baby sleeps, because you're always up and checking, and there are also intrusive thoughts that happen to women. And I think every woman has experienced that once or twice, but when they're really getting in the way of you doing things. So this would be something like avoiding going downstairs because you have the intrusive thought that you might throw the baby down the stairs or fall down the stairs. I mean, these are things that women, you know, hate to say out loud, but the thoughts are alarming to us because we don't want, you know, the woman does not want to do them. But when those are taking place and they're kind of the type that you can't escape, right? That more than, I don't want to give a percentage, that you might feel that way, but that more often than not, you are feeling not yourself, anxious, depressed. You know, there can be different types. Then that's when you want to ask for more help.
So, is this something you think all parents need to be armed with, or is this more if someone's had a history of mental health issues?
I do recommend that all new parents develop some form of mental health check-in. You know, we can get into kind of the different things that could be involved in it.
Sure.
But we know that there are risk factors that make some people more likely to develop postpartum mood disorders than others. But, you know, there are many women who say they never thought that this would happen to them. They didn't have any history. So this is not being alarmist or trying to scare anyone. It's just better to be prepared.
Laying the groundwork in case you need it. It's better to have it there than struggling and
scrambling.
Right.
There's so many challenges postpartum. What new parent wouldn't benefit from thinking a little bit ahead about what they might want to do if they're having a hard time. And I think it's hard for people to do because we are so focused on pregnancy and birth. You know, I always use the analogy. It's like telling someone who's about to run a marathon, like, let's talk about your recovery. You know, they're like, what do you mean? I just want to run this race, you know? And so it's understandable, but a little planning can be a huge benefit for everyone involved, the parents, the baby, and the extended family, because they may know how to help you a bit more if that's something that you talk about beforehand.
So let's go a little bit into personal history. So can you talk a little bit about the importance of personal history? And should a new mother also consider that of her parents? And might that play a role in postpartum mood and anxiety disorder?
Yes. So if you have had a previous mental health diagnosis, you are at greater risk for a PMAD, for a postpartum or prenatal, perinatal.
Perinatal,
yes. Mood and or anxiety disorder. So we aren't entirely certain about the role of parents and their mental health history, but certain mental illnesses do have a genetic component, such as bipolar disorder, depression, et cetera. So it can be helpful to ask your parents about their history as well. It's sometimes helpful to ask your mom or your sister about her experience after birth. We don't know that your experience will be the same, so don't panic if they had a rough time. But one benefit of asking is that you do know, you know, your family history. And then also you open that door, you know, for that conversation. How did you cope, Mom? You know, how did, how was it for you? And you kind of hear their story. You can take the parts that you think work for you and maybe leave the parts that don't. But so there's some benefit even just, you know, on that level. But if you do have a history, or there's some family history, of mental health diagnosis, I would suggest, if you already have a therapist, talking about what the plan might be for postpartum, because it's really hard to get to a therapy office after you've had a baby. So, you know, are they open to a phone check-in or, you know, what will be, kind of the process if you need to reach out and schedule something if you're not already, you know, going to be scheduled after giving birth. So really touching base about that beforehand. If you had a previous therapist but you're not in touch, maybe getting back in touch and just saying like, you know, I'm about to have a baby. I just want to let you know so that if I'm struggling, we kind of have that open line of communication. And if you've never been in therapy, maybe seeking out just some referrals just to have on hand. If you're really worried about it, you could always call someone and just do a consultation before so you know, like, this is the person I'm going to call. I think that some people find that really reassuring. But other people just want to have the referrals and kind of, like, have that list. The other thing you could do is have a conversation with your OB beforehand. You know, if I'm struggling either prenatally or postpartum with anxiety, do you have referrals, you know, on hand, or do I need to be looking somewhere else for those? So kind of just knowing where your resource is going to be and making them a little closer at hand so that, you know, the worst thing is to be really struggling and really not have the energy to go and find someone, you know, for help.
Yeah, especially if you do a consult ahead of time, you can get a sense if they're a good fit for you too, so that you're not
exactly
in that emergency state and someone may not feel good because you're so hypersensitive. So I like that idea.
Exactly.
The consults.
And most therapists will do a free 15-minute consult, no problem. That's pretty standard. So
That's a great idea. So let's talk a little bit about medication. Now, I know obviously someone needs to consult with their care provider, and this is not something they should take on their own. Do you have suggestions for someone I had a friend who was very much having anxiety disorder, and she had been on medication. She went off of it during her pregnancy, and she finally went back on postpartum, but she hesitated. And I think there is a fear or stigma she was concerned about being on medication while breastfeeding. So can you talk a little bit about regulating medication during pregnancy and postpartum?
Definitely. I'll start by saying I'm not a psychiatrist, this is my area, and I do think there is that stigma, and many women kind of rush to the decision to go off of their medication for pregnancy or postpartum or while breastfeeding, and I can certainly understand that. I mean, I remember being pregnant wanting to minimize, you know, the medications I was using. But if you're currently on medication for mental health, and for a lot of women, the ongoing prescription is coming from maybe your GP or just a general psychiatrist, I would really suggest that you check in with a reproductive psychiatrist, so someone who has really specialized knowledge in this area. And if you're in New York, there are quite a few. But to do this before you make any changes. So it's understandable to want to go off, but you want to do so based on the best information, right? What are really the risks and, you know, the pros and cons of being on or off medication? You wouldn't go off kind of a diabetes medication or a blood pressure medication during pregnancy without thinking about the risks, right? And we kind of downplay the risk of not being on medication. Mm-hmm. There are some risks there if you're really struggling. There are, you know, the stress hormones, and then postpartum, there's that ability to be present for your baby and to be able to form that relationship. So those things have to be weighed out. And the best person to do that is a reproductive psychiatrist. You know, the medications, I think the stigma is there for a couple different reasons. But one thing is that medications for mental health are really understudied generally, but they're very understudied for women during pregnancy. There's no good way to do a clinical trial around that. And so we have these conceptions that they're negative, that they have a negative impact, but that hasn't really been borne out by research. And they recently did away with some of the drug classifications, the A, B, C, D that we're used to, mm-hmm. For pregnancy, just because they realized there was a different amount of evidence and studies, it wasn't really a fair comparison, you know, to say this one is an A and this one is a B. It wasn't really a
good system. So is it all kind of on an even playing field about taking them, or is there some that there is some information might be better for pregnancy, mm-hmm. and postpartum, you're saying that's been taken away?
I'm saying, you know, the general classifications have been taken away, okay. But if you consult a reproductive psychiatrist, there are definitely some that are more well studied than others and that are recommended. Right.
What about the idea of switching? Like, so say someone's been mm-hmm. on medication and it's working for them, but maybe it's not as studied. Yeah. Would that be something they should talk to their care provider, not their care provider, but someone even more specialized about switching, or can that be rocking the boat too much? Because that means you'd have to withdraw from one to go on to another.
Mm-hmm. So that's where really weighing those pros and cons comes in. And I would do that with a reproductive psychiatrist, because they're the ones who are really trained to know, you know, really specifically what the withdrawal symptoms will be and what the benefit of switching is and that kind of thing. So, but I think it's important to do that, because otherwise women do tend to err on the side of either, you know, taking less or, you know, I've worked with several women who have just kind of on their own reduced their dose it's trickier. It definitely, it's trickier for everyone to figure out what's going on and what part is your symptoms, what part is the medication withdrawal, that kind of thing.
Yeah, so I think bottom line is don't self-medicate.
Definitely.
And ask for and seek real help, not just, you know, mm-hmm. internet.
Not just general.
Not yeah, just general exactly. help or Dr. Google. So let's stay with
yes,
Dr. Google.
Exactly.
Okay,
exactly.
Good. I'm really glad we had a chance to talk to that, because I've heard this throughout the years of either the guilt feeling or self-regulating mm-hmm. and medicating, and that just never seems like a good idea. So if someone's having a really hard time, they didn't get kind of they didn't do the homework. And again, that sounds kind of guilty and judgmental. So they didn't have a plan.
They didn't have a chance.
They
to
didn't
do that.
Have, mm-hmm. yeah, they just for it, you know, or like, you never know how things unfold. Is there like a hotline, or how does someone seek support?
Yeah. I mean, right. So there is actually, I would say, first of all, confide in someone that you trust. It's always easier to carry this when you know you're not carrying it alone. Right. So if there is someone, you know, a family member, a friend, go ahead and confide in them. And then together, if you can, you know, not everyone feels that that's an avenue for them, but if that's there, then do it. I always think it's just easier to carry something when you're not carrying it alone. If you're feeling like you really need immediate help, there is something called Postpartum Support International, www.postpartum.net. So this is for, despite the name, it's for prenatal or postpartum. And they have a warm line. So they won't answer right away, but you leave a message and they will call you back. A trained volunteer who's usually a mental health professional, will call you back within 24 hours. So that number is 1-800-944-4773. You can also text them because they found that people are just more likely to send out a text message. And so the text is 503-894-9453. And again, all this information is on their website, www.postpartum.net. And that's if you need kind of immediate help, and they're going to try to link you with help. If it's an emergency, if you feel hurt yourself or, hurt your baby, obviously you want to go to an emergency room. But this is for, that kind of immediate but not urgent help. Mm-hmm. Other resources. So they also on their website have what they call a PSI coordinator for each region. So they have New York coordinators. There are several, including one that speaks Spanish. They will help you to find someone who's trained in perinatal mental health and hopefully who takes your insurance or, who's accessible to you. They're a really good resource. You can also touch base with your OB. They may have referrals. They're starting to really understand that they need to have those ready.
Also pediatricians.
Pediatricians, yeah, they also often have lists. They're also getting better about screening and about having referrals ready. The Prenatal Yoga Center, if you're part of that community, you guys have a great resource area. Yeah. And also, have made referrals, I know. So
yeah, to you.
That's very nice. But you have that whole referral.
Yeah, we really do. We have people that from all over the city. We do. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think a lot of places do. I was actually thinking as we're talking about like the OBs. I had a midwife. I didn't see her too much right after, but I was seeing my pediatrician quite regularly. Mm-hmm. A few days after and a few days after that, and then I got to know her well because she lived, we were two blocks from her and we were there all the time. But I then later asked her, and she was asking me questions. Like she was kind of stringing out our time together, watching me breastfeed. And she says that's how she screens. So she works with the baby, but also watches the parent. I thought that was really interesting. So you don't feel like you're being screened, but she is aware. So I thought that was something I hope all pediatricians do that.
Right. I mean, I think, there are screening tools, right? But it really is about the relationship as well, because if you don't feel comfortable with your pediatrician or OB, or you feel like, they're going to misunderstand you or think that you're not a good enough mother, if you're suffering from a postpartum mood disorder, then you're not going to reveal what's really going on. So I love that she was really, first of all, building your relationship with her, mm-hmm. and then also
and trust.
Looking at
right,
and
really
then taking
helpful.
Some time to observe you. I think that's wonderful.
Yeah, so I hope all pediatricians are
doing
that.
I know. I've been trying to work with pediatricians' office just to increase their confidence in screening and also in making referrals, because I think there's that feeling of like I don't want to open Pandora's box, so I won't go there. But that, you're right. They see moms so much more frequently.
Yeah. Than after the birth. So during the postpartum time, I know many new parents feel their personal needs fall by the wayside. How would you suggest still taking care of personal needs during this very draining time?
Mm-hmm. Yes. It's so important. And I talk about it a lot individually and with couples. So again, if you can do this before you give birth, it's great. But so doing some self-care planning. And so that means sitting down, either with yourself or, even better with your partner, and thinking about what you might need postpartum and then how you're going to work together to get, because I think especially in New York, we're so used to, and if we want to meet our needs, we do it. We don't need someone else to help us to do it necessarily, or at least that's the idea that we have. But now you have a baby, and if you're meeting your self-care needs, often it means someone else is taking care of the baby. So you really have to schedule the time, right, with your partner to talk about what are those top priorities. For me, it was I had to get outside every day. And I had both my babies in the winter. That was something I had to be very specific about with my partner, that when he came in, I was going to leave. So, I mean, some days you can get out with the babies and it's fine. And, you know, but there are other days where you fairly. And so I remember, you know, one night, very memorably, there was a blizzard and he's coming home and talking about how they're shutting down the subways early. And, I'm putting on my boots and he's saying, what are you doing? It's terrible out there. And I said, I just need 30 minutes of fresh air. I was like, remember, this is the thing we said, this is my self-care. And he thought I was crazy, but, you know, he was up for it. And so that was something, you know, important for us to have talked about beforehand, and that I was going to need that, because otherwise he might say to me like, oh, I'm just got out of work. You know, I need a chance to change. And that would be fine too. But he knew that at some point I was going to leave for 10 or 15 minutes to just walk, be on my own.
Yeah. Getting out of the house.
It might be something different.
So here's kind of I don't know if there's any correlation, but self-care, obviously you feel better usually and more grounded after.
Yes.
So what is the correlation of taking, and it, maybe there isn't, maybe this is too much a stretch, of honoring self-care and following those self-care routines and lessening any sort of perinatal mood and anxiety disorder, or is that just too much of like a fix it, or is that more for like baby blues?
I mean, I think that is the right word, right? So we can't totally fix it, like you said, but those are, you know, preventative factors.
Preventative, when that would be okay.
Yeah, exactly. So, you know, one thing that we didn't touch on that, you know, I'd like to is when you're taking care of yourself and when, you know, you have thought about your support roster, as you know very well, Deb, because you created the community that's Prenatal Yoga Center, but women really were not meant to do this alone. And so respecting that you're going to have needs, that you're going to need ways to get sleep, that you're going to need ways to take care of yourself, take breaks, whatever it might be. Hearing that and filling out your support roster ahead of time, thinking, who's going to help me with this specifically? Who's my good emotional support person? My whatever it might be, my mother-in-law might not be the person I'm going to go cry to, you know, but she's really great at
babysitting,
making meals, or she'll take the baby away and let me shower, you know. So knowing who kind of can do what, and then looking, are there holes in your roster? You know, do you need, to look for more support in one area or another? Do you think you might feel isolated? And you might want to think about a new mom's group or make friends, around the same gestation prenatally. So I think those preventative measures do have an impact. You know, we can't say that they can directly prevent any kind of mood disorder, but definitely there's the idea that taking care of yourself and making that time for self-care and making time for whatever you might be feeling, not kind of having to push it down or numb out, if you can, if the feeling is too overwhelming, then, you know, that's valuable. So the two, you know, preventative things that I like to talk about are planning for self-care with your partner or whatever other supports you have. And then you won't always know what you will need. I don't think anyone can explain what it's like to have a new baby, really. So asking for help when you feel you're in too deep, or when you feel like you can't take one more night of not getting a long check on sleep, or, you know, not being afraid to invest in yourself during that time. I think women have the idea that it's selfish, and that this is a time for them to be selfless. And I don't think investing in yourself and your family and your baby, because that's what you're really doing, is selfish. So I think we need to really dispel that myth.
Yeah, I think there is definitely this myth of you can do it all on your own. You can do it, you know, you can do it all. I can have the whole big picture. And I also think that especially, and this is very regional, but, you know, New York tends to be a place where people go to for, I'm going to say career usually. Like, I'm being very broad. But a place like that, I feel like there's very few like authentic New Yorkers, you know, like, you know, we all kind of came here for whatever dream or reason and then stayed, and often moving away from family, where I think that's, again, it's more regional. I don't think this is the whole listenership. And from my own experience and the experience of many of my friends in this region, we don't have family. So when you were talking about filling that roster, here I am well out of the postpartum. My kids are 4 and 7, but not having family around, and this has been the conversation I have with many of my friends, it's really hard. And I think I underestimated that. I underestimated that hugely. Like, even just this thing of like a kid is sick or there's a half day or no school, all of a sudden the parents are scrambling, hiring sitters. I definitely think this is not necessarily how it was meant to be, like, you know, in raising kids. So you hit on something very big. Really,
yes. Yeah. It really enhances that feeling that it all falls on you.
When it does, when it
actually, because it kind of does. It does. And so I think there's some shame sometimes that people have about, support roster, even if that means hiring someone, if that's, you know, possible for you. And it might mean, you know, I think outsourcing can be big and small. It can be, you know, hiring someone to help with childcare and give you a break. It could be, you know, someone who comes to deep clean, you know, once every couple months, because you just are not going to get time to do the baseboard or, you know, crazy thing that we think that we might do someday. And so just knowing like that, that's not on my plate. I'm doing all these other things, but this one doesn't have to be. And there's not shame in that, because like you said, we weren't meant to do it all in the way that we kind of have that image.
Yeah, I know. I've actually found that and for years. I'm like, I can keep it all together. And then I'm like, no, but I really can't. And I feel better when I have help. That's just my own thing. So can you talk a bit about staying connected to your partner at this time? Because there seems to be like there can be big resentment built up between who gets what tasks. And sometimes a lot of the tasks fall more on the birthing parent. And obviously, if there's resentment and disconnection, that's not going to lead to a healthy mental state during postpartum.
Definitely. So, you know, I think psychologically we can think about some of that resentment is about the situation in general, right? So you have this new baby, and this huge change in your life, and it can feel bad to be frustrated or resentful of the new baby. You know, even if they're crying incessantly at night, feel frustrated, but a lot of times it gets turned on the partner, right? So we've all been there where it's the middle of the night and you're doing the shushing and all of that. And then, you know, you just look at your partner like, you do something, you know, because it doesn't feel good to feel resentful of the baby. So I just want to put out there that I think that's part of it, that it gets kind of pushed off a situation or the baby onto a safer place, which is in our minds, the partner, right? But it's not always so helpful. And then there's the very real thing of like you said, the tasks. You know, how are the tasks distributed? And a lot of it does fall to the mom. You know, the mom is many times the one doing a lot of the feeding or a lot of the food or a lot of the calming of baby. Like, all of these things seem to fall to the mom. So I think in terms of staying connected, a couple of things. One is really having, and again, you know, I'm big on the check-ins, but really having some clear conversations about that and not having it just be kind of unspoken, that, you know, here's where we are right now and this is how it's feeling. Is this something that we want to change? Is this something where the partner just needs, who is taking on more, just needs to hear more appreciation? You know, kind of just opening those lines of communication about what's going on. And sometimes for the dad or the non-birthing partner, they may be vulnerable enough to say, you know, I could take on more, but I'm not sure how to. You know, they may need a little more instruction at times or permission to fail, right? So they're going to do it their way and it might not look the way that mom's doing it. That kind of thing. So really getting to the root of what's going on and not just letting it kind of continue and let resentment build. So that would be one. And then the second would be, if you have any ability to do this, try and continue the times of just the two of you, right? So even if it's once a month, a date night, a date afternoon, that time when you're not kind of in the midst of it all, being parents, is really important to reestablish kind of the kind of deep connectedness that keeps these little things from feeling so big. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
That they take on a lot more meaning sometimes when we're not feeling connected at all.
Yeah, I think that's so important. You have to feel like this is why we started the family, because we actually like each other, you know, more than just love, like enjoy each other's time. Because I think it can get very easily caught up into the routine of like, you change that diaper, I'm going to do a feeding, you wash that, I'm going to get the bottle, you know, like, so I think it can get very routine.
Yeah. Right. And I think it puts into perspective, like, okay, this person's behavior is frustrating me, but it doesn't let it snowball into this person has a character flaw. They're lazy or not helpful, like, which is what our minds do, right? Our minds do turn it into something like that when it could be just a behavior that we want to have addressed. Like, you know, hey, when I leave the bottles, or after I'm done pumping, really help me if you would clean the bottles, because I feel like I need, you know, 30 minutes to between before the next feeding to take a nap, you know, like being a little clearer.
Communication.
That it's just a behavior that can be addressed. Exactly. Communication.
I like that. So to start to wrap things up, is there anything that I haven't asked that you're just dying to put in there? You're like, oh, this is so important. Or we might have hit it all.
You've done a good job. Yeah, you've done a good job of covering it.
Good.
You know, I think, definitely. So the last thing I'll say is just, you know, the importance of other moms and community, right? So that can be for your planning for mental health.
Absolutely.
You know, what kind of community do you think you're going to need? And, you know, for some people who are more introverted, it might be, you want to be in a new mom's group, but that's it. You know, and for other people, they want their day to day to involve, you know, going to classes with other moms or being at other moms' houses or things like that. So just think about what you're going to need and where you might get it beforehand can really help.
I love it. That's so true. So where can people find your work?
Sure. So my website is www.evelyngama, that's G-A-M-A, counseling.com. And I have a practice on the Upper West Side, but I also make home visits and, do phone and video sessions, because I do know it's so difficult for moms to get out, moms and partners to get out after having a baby. So I try to make myself available.
Oh, I love that.
And I should also just mention, I do, you know, this is a whole other podcast, but I do, work with special needs families, and I do, NICU visits are needed, because sometimes when you're running back and forth between home and the NICU, thinking about going to a third place is not doable. So I'm available as well.
Well, that's a really good plug, because I want to do another podcast with you about handling life with a baby in the NICU, because you did experience that firsthand. So we're going to plan that. Mm-hmm. So if those that are concerned about what that, if they might have that situation, or those that are going through it, or those that have gone through it already and they're still healing from that, we're going to do a podcast about the NICU, because no one wants that situation, but many people have that situation. So we'll offer some support.
That's true.
Well, thank you so much, Evelyn. I really enjoyed speaking with
you. Thank you.
All right. Well, have a good afternoon.
Same here. Thank you so much.
Okay. Bye.
You too. Thanks.
This has been an episode of Yoga Birth Babies, produced by Prenatal Yoga Center. You can catch us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Periscope. I'm Deb Flaschenberg. Thanks for listening.